This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. Politics, opioid overdose prevention, the pandemic, and of course, school.
But I just feel like that kids physically, mentally, socially, they need to be back in school. And again, if they don't, if the parents choose not to, then that's their option.
It's all coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. National Poll Worker Recruitment Day is set for tomorrow, Tuesday, September 1st, to help enlist potential poll workers for the 2020 general election. It's the first ever National Recruitment Day established by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission to address shortages of poll workers. In West Virginia, county executive committees nominate individuals to work the polls. County clerk's offices have to find alternatives before Election Day in cases where poll workers call off for any reason, such as the pandemic. This year, West Virginia kicked off its elective service campaign to recruit alternate poll workers ahead of the primaries. The West Virginia Real Estate Commission stepped up to encourage members to sign up to work the polls. Now, ahead of the general, the United Way is doing the same. To be a poll worker in West Virginia, you have to be registered to vote in your county, be able to read and write, attend training, and be available to work all of Election Day. Any interested voter can sign up at govotewv.com. Since the pandemic began, overdoses have spiked across the state. A local coalition will be giving out opioid overdose antidote kits as a preventative measure this Wednesday, Caitlin Tan reports.
At 17 locations throughout Putnam and Kanawha counties, volunteers will hand out 1,000 free naloxone kits. This West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources event is part of Save a Life Day. The focus is on the two counties because of the higher rates of overdoses, according to Tina Ramirez. She's the director for the Great Rivers Regional System for Addiction Care in Hurricane. Ramirez says over the past 6 months of the pandemic and social distancing, overdoses have spiked across the state.
We always talk about the opposite of addiction is connection.
Also, she says the pandemic has shifted the public's attention away from opioid overdoses.
We still have this epidemic going on within the pandemic.
Save a Life Day will be Wednesday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. in both Kanawha and Putnam counties. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan.
For more information and to find out where the kits will be handed out, go to the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources website. More than 3,800 notices have been sent to West Virginia families of babies born exposed to drugs as part of the Purdue Pharma bankruptcy case. The names were sought by a group of attorneys in order to send their families a notice of pending litigation that they might be eligible to seek compensation, according to the Herald-Dispatch. A Kanawha County judge signed an order allowing the State Department of Health and Human Resources to release the addresses where children are believed to be living. The notice was sent out last week. The deadline for individuals and entities to file a claim against Purdue Pharma in the federal bankruptcy case was July 30th, according to Charleston attorney Booth Goodwin. Attorneys were concerned that many did not know they qualify for compensation because the bankruptcy court was not allowed to access their information. Two attorneys were appointed by the court on the children's behalf to receive the addresses from a registry that identifies babies born with the syndrome. Schools in West Virginia are about to start the new school year amid debate over how and when to teach during the coronavirus pandemic. Over in Kentucky, Governor Andy Beshear urged schools to delay in-person instruction, but Callaway County schools have gone ahead with in-person learning, even as the county has a high number of cases. Liam Niemeyer visited with a school nurse in the district who says she faces the biggest challenge of her career.
Just different sizes, Band-Aids, bandages that we have, blood pressure cuffs.
Tina Ryan has all the go-to supplies of a veteran school nurse at East Callaway Elementary.
You have your itch cream. That's the biggie that we use very frequently.
Are kids itchy?
Oh, yeah. Bug bites all the time.
Ryan uses her supplies to deal with headaches, vision screenings, and the kids she calls frequent flyers, or kids who might just be trying to get out of class. But that's not all she has in her toolbox this year. She has a new touchless infrared thermometer to scan students' foreheads for fever for COVID-19 symptoms.
Somebody's gonna test positive, but we have what we're going to do if that happens.
I mean, it's just inevitable. It's going to happen.
This pandemic is unlike anything in her 20 years caring for school kids. And identifying COVID-19 in kids is hard when symptoms could look like a lot of other things.
Okay, well, you know, it's allergy season. You know, it's hot outside. Everybody's coughing, you know, so we're not going to send them home just for a cough.
There's a lot that worries her. Research shows kids are more likely to be asymptomatic carriers. She worries that families not following COVID-19 guidelines will send their kids to school. And she worries about kids with chronic illnesses who could be more vulnerable.
If one person, ends up getting really, really sick or possibly even dying, you know, that would be devastating. That would be so devastating. Yeah. But I wouldn't think it was the school's fault, you know, because I know what we've done. I know how hard we have worked, you know, to do things. So, you know, but it would still be hard.
But despite those concerns, Ryan is confident in the school district's plan to reopen in person.
How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good.
Okay, you got your hands full.
When I walked into East Conway last week, I got a temperature check and hand sanitizer, something all students get each day. All teachers and staff self-screen for symptoms before the school day. Masks are required when social distancing can't be maintained. But Conway County is among places in the state identified as COVID-19 hotspots. In an August report from the White House, the report says the county has a coronavirus test positivity rate of over 10% as of August 23rd. Kentucky's governor has urged hotspot counties to delay in-person classes. But Ryan says kids need to go back to school.
But, I just feel like that kids physically, mentally, socially, they need to be back in school. You know, it's time to be back. They want to be back. And again, if the parents choose not to, then that's their option.
A Conway County school spokesperson on August 21st said the district expected about 60% of their more than 2,500 students coming back in person. Already, one rural district in central Kentucky switched to virtual learning after a COVID-19 spike in the region. As of August 25th, there have been 4 COVID-19 cases associated with the Conway County District, but school officials say no exposure has happened at schools. About 1 week into classes, Ryan says things have gone well so far, even with more kids in classes than she expected. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm William Niemeyer.
Meditation is one method to cope with a stressful situation like coronavirus. Eastern Kentucky University Coordinator of Community Intervention, Natalie Deering, leads a weekly virtual meditation session for students, faculty, and staff.
I love the saying, we can't stop the waves, right? We cannot stop the waves, but what we can do is we can learn how to surf. We can learn how to surf and ride on top of those waves and ride out the situation until eventually it calms down, rather than getting swept up in it and, like I said, feeling like we can't breathe.
Deering says meditation can offer an opportunity to pause and observe what's going on both within and around you.
You can observe it with that non-judgmental awareness. You can observe it like with that open curiosity, because when we're in a state of curiosity, we are not in a fear state. We're in a calm state. We're in an open state.
Deering says time set aside to meditate can make one stronger in tolerating stress. The staff counselor says that can be very important now when people may feel unsafe. The Republican Party made its pitch to the American people at its national convention last week. And in his address, President Donald Trump made his case for fossil fuels, such as coal. Sidney Bowles spoke with stakeholders across the Ohio Valley on how the industry has fared under the Trump administration and what another 4 years might bring.
Back in 2016, then-candidate Donald Trump was all in on coal.
West Virginia Coal Association just endorsed me. Let's put it this way. It was between me and Hillary.
Trump visited West Virginia and proudly donned a miner's hard hat. He promised to roll back regulations, bring back coal jobs, and end what his supporters called Obama's war on coal. So, 4 years later, how did he do? Like so many things in politics, it depends on who you ask. Amanda Woodrum is the senior researcher for Policy Matters Ohio, a progressive think tank.
It didn't happen and it didn't work and it was false hope.
On the other end of the political spectrum, Chris Anderson, vice president of the West Virginia Coal Association.
We think he's done remarkably well. It's almost the day he took office. We began to new mines opening, new mines being permitted. We saw a lot of miners that were furloughed and laid off being called back.
And somewhere in the middle, Samantha Gross, director of the Energy Security and Climate Initiative at the Brookings Institution.
The Trump administration has not been successful in reviving coal use and in bringing back coal jobs. The Trump administration has focused on rolling back some regulations relating to coal use, but because these regulations weren't the reason that coal was having troubles to begin with, rolling them back hasn't made much of a difference.
According to Brookings, coal used to generate electricity has continued to decline in the Trump era, decreasing by 22% between 2016 and 2019. And data from the Department of Labor show coal employment declining steadily since the end of the Obama years, from about 55,000 miners nationwide in 2016 to about 45,000 miners nationwide in July of this year. Maybe those dismal numbers are part of why coal and coal miners haven't been so front and center in the Republicans' pitch to the American people. The West Virginia Coal Association endorsed Trump this time around, too. But Trump wasn't there to celebrate it. And you'd be forgiven for missing brief mentions of coal and natural gas in the Republican convention last week. There was this, though.
Biden has promised to abolish the production of American oil, coal, shale, and natural gas, laying waste to the economies of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New Mexico. Millions of jobs will be lost, and energy prices will soar.
But Trump's appeal to coal communities has never really been about energy policy, says Dee Davis, president of the Center for Rural Strategies.
Republicans have for a long time supported coal miners and farmers and factory workers, not as economic policy, but as cultural icons. People don't vote policy, they vote, who do people like me vote for?
Samantha Gross with the Brookings Institution says that may be changing.
There are certainly a few other politicians who are thinking about what would a Republican stance on climate look like. But the current president is not. But it is an issue that voters care about. The electorate in some ways is leaving the party behind.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Ford. This is West Virginia Morning.